Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and my guest this week is Mindy Roberts from the Washington Environmental Council. And we'll be talking about the We Are Puget Sound project. It's full of books and campaigns and lectures, and it's a campaign to engage people living in the Salish Sea and the Puget Sound watersheds in loving, stewarding, and enjoying the natural and human world around us. But first, let's hear this week's mystery sound. A quick hint, the makers of these calls are making their presence known around town over the past month. And I discovered something today from a friend. We probably, many of you know about, if you're interested in bird songs, know about the apps. There's several that will identify or help you learn bird songs. In addition to the All About Birds from Cornell Ornithology Lab, there's an app called Song Sleuth. There's an Audubon app called Maryland Bird ID, but this friend told me about enjoying another app, playing a game with her young grandson. It's called Lark Wire, and it's all about learning and recognizing birds and bird songs. My guest today is Mindy Roberts. Mindy's with the Washington Environmental Council, where she leads the People for Puget Sound program. And I think this is a really cool program. I don't know much about it, but I am impressed by their goals about being an advocate for clean water and healthy habitats. And importantly, the sort of renewed leadership we need to recover and protect Puget Sound. The other thing about Wendy's bio that really impressed me is as an environmental engineer, she works at that fascinating and crucially important nexus between conservation and stewardship of natural resources and meeting human needs. So I think that must be a fascinating job. So I'm going to ask you, Mindy, tell me just a bit more about yourself and the role you play with the Washington Environmental Council.
Yeah, you bet. And Nan, thank you for having me on your program. Glad to talk with you today. I live in Tacoma, and I've lived here for about two decades now. And prior to that, I lived and worked in very polluted parts of the world. So in places where ecosystems had really just basically been destroyed. And my job as an environmental engineer was to figure out how do we lessen impacts from people on rivers, on lakes, on marine waters, by designing stormwater treatment systems, wastewater treatment systems. Mm-hmm. And then most recently, I helped develop computer models of how water and pollution moves around in Puget Sound. And over that time, I realized just how important waters are to communities of people, to people mm-hmm. who rely on waters for sustenance, for recreation, for benefits. And I often found that their voices sometimes can be overshadowed by special interests.
Yes.
So that's why I quit my engineering career and joined WEC and Washington Conservation Voters so we can connect people with opportunities to make a difference and plugging in people to where their voices can be heard.
So a bit more about then the People for Puget Sound project. Does that focus that energy on the sort of geography of Puget Sound then?
You bet. And this is We Are Puget Sound, which is a book, but it's also in an exhibit. It's also a campaign. And right after I joined WEC, I happened to run into a former colleague of mine from state service. And we just got to talking about how lucky we are to live in a place like this. What a unique spot it is. But at the same time, feeling like we needed more to galvanize public engagement, to really drive political will around this unique ecosystem. Before we lose it, before it's just too polluted and too damaged that we really have to recover it. So So Brian Walsh is his name. Turns out he's a wonderful photographer. He had already been talking with another of our former colleagues, David Workman, who's a talented writer. And we started pulling together. I work for an advocacy organization. So we had the horizon line of clean water and healthy habitat mm-hmm. for the future. And then I also had a connection with Braided River, which is a conservation-based publisher. And we pitched a very visionary Helen Cherulo on our idea for this book and the campaign.
Wow. That's exciting to sort of take, you know, a brainstorming amongst colleagues into real action. That sometimes happened, but not really enough. Tell me more about the book and the exhibit. And I did mention at the beginning of the program that you'll be giving the talk this coming Sunday. And I think that's January the 23rd over Zoom, of course, for the Port Townsend Marine Science Center about We Are Puget Sound, the book and the exhibit and your campaign, and the fact that the exhibit is newly up in the new space that the Science Center has downtown on Water Street. So you sort of did a little bit about how it came to be and your sort of visions. Tell me more. What made it work? Who are the partners? And what your really key goals were? You've talked a bit about that, but some detail to that.
Yeah. And as Brian and David and Helen and I talked early on, what we really wanted to offer with this is connecting people to place and connecting people with each other. And ironically, this was published in October of 2019. So just a few months really before the COVID pandemic hit. Yeah. And what we realized is that in our worlds today, it's just so easy to get lost in all of the things that aren't working well, on things mm-hmm. that are going wrong. And yet, through our work, we're aware of very passionate people who are very effective in their communities and their everyday lives, making a difference and doing things that really benefit all of us. And so they're leading their communities, they're making changes. We wanted to bring their stories to light. We wanted to bring the photos of the inspiring places and people and creatures around us. And we also wanted to bring a specific set of actions that people can take that really will help us achieve systemic mm-hmm. change. So that's why there's components that include a book, our website, the larger campaign, but it's really about driving actions, things that people can do, whether you've got 5 minutes or 5 days to get involved.
I was really conscious as I read the book about We Are Puget Sound really brings people into the frame. And I think you did a wonderful job. So much of the time we hear the phrase Salish Sea, and yet you very specifically chosen to use the phrase Puget Sound. So I'm curious why you did that and how you define it geographically, ecologically, why that phrase?
That is such a great question. And we talked about this extensively for lots of reasons. And the phrase Puget Sound, Puget Sound is just much better known than the phrase Salish Sea.
That's true. That's true.
At the same time, the Salish Sea encompasses not just the sound, but also the Strait of Georgia, the Strait mm-hmm. of Juan de Fuca, mm-hmm. as well as, of course, south of Admiralty Inlet, right. which is the formal geographic distinction mm-hmm. for the...
Yeah, that's what I learned when I studied back in the Dark Ages, that it was the sill at Admiralty Inlet that defined Puget Sound.
Exactly. And frankly, that's why this book has places that people can visit throughout the entire mm-hmm. Salish Sea, including places of formal Puget Sound. But also, we realized as we were talking about names in the book is that centuries ago, the Puget Expedition thought that they were naming all sorts of features in this area, but it turns out that those features already had names. They had names sure. from the Coast Salish people, from the Nuchalnuth tribes who had lived around the Salish Sea for thousands of years. So in the process of bringing the book together, we conferred with a number of tribal people and chose mm-hmm. the title of the book as We Are Puget Sound. But then we also refer to the larger Salish Sea in the subtitle in discovering and recovering mm-hmm. the Salish Sea. So we wanted to use a name that people are familiar with, but at the same time, really start to elevate the Salish Sea as a place name, as the inland sea mm-hmm. includes Puget mm-hmm. Sound, but it includes much more.
And to acknowledge the native cultures that were here before us. As I was reading the book, and I think actually the phrase comes up somewhere early in the book, and it's a phrase I think of a lot, the concept that we only protect what we love and we only love what we know. The introduction to the book adds, and we only know what we see. And that's sort of such a wonderful connection to those amazing photographs. It also appeals to me because that's what motivates me to have this radio show, is to just have a little bit of information go out to our community to help people know and learn to love and protect. So it's a really powerful concept to me. As you look now at the product of the campaign and the book and the exhibit, talk to me about how well you feel that got accomplished and how it's expressed in your activities.
You bet. And we have this vision of using really great photographers to tell this story. They are so talented, and truly that is the relationships with Braided River and with Helen Cerullo and her colleagues mm-hmm. there. But we knew we wanted to make this very visual. It's not a textbook. It's really to draw people in. And I've got to share my two very favorite photos in the book are first the fish that's on the first page. It's a photo by Brandon Cole. It's in the exhibit at the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. It's a decorated war bonnet. It just grabs you. Its yes. eyes are looking right at you, mm-hmm. and the white tufts on its head, it kind of reminds me of punk rock hair, and the mouth,
and
is, open.
Mouth is open. Like
exactly.
It wants to talk to you. Yeah,
exactly. It's like we're talking to each other on the conversation, mm-hmm. and I hear that they're very shy fish, so loved that photo. And few people get to see a fish like that up close.
Yeah, I've only seen it. Well, they had one in the Science Center one year, and I saw one tide pooling. And it took us a really long time to figure out what it was, because the war bonnet kind of drops down on its head when it's, you know, tucked in a crevice somewhere. But yeah, they're hard to find.
They are. So we have that. There's all sorts of photos below the water. But then on the surface of the water, my other favorite photo is one by Amy Gulick of a little girl that's grabbing a tulip in the field. And whenever I see that, it makes me think about future generations. And that's where, mm-hmm. when I see that, I want her to have access to what I have today when she grows up. I want mm-hmm. to have clean water, to be able to fish for salmon, to see an orca along the waterfront, and have healthy communities around her that rely on the sound. And I love the balance of photos of places, of cute little critters, but amazing mm-hmm. people as well, who just, they mm-hmm. all have stories. And I think
there are lots of good people stories in the book, you know, people who are making a difference and people who are just experiencing where they live. Well, I'm curious now too, what's your connection to Puget Sound and what makes it special for you? Because I can hear in your voice it's special.
Yes, pretty fortunate to have my passion be my day job as well, which is pretty lucky these days. It actually goes back to the 1990s. I was working in New England at the time, and my husband and I came out here on vacation. And I remember we crossed the Sound on a ferry. Of course, it had to be sunset. And then mm-hmm. enjoyed exploring the shorelines, the rivers, the mountains of the region. And a few years later, we actually moved to Tacoma. And last fall, I was having just one of those challenging days. And I walked down to the Ruston Way waterfront in Tacoma, trying to clear my head, spark a little creative thinking. And I remember it was a really low tide. So I started poking around in the nooks and crannies, and I came across this flamboyantly colored marine worm and all these little critters. And so I was in awe at that. But then I looked down the beach and I spotted this old sunk concrete float. So it was basically debris along the waterfront. It mm-hmm. kind of made me mad. So I went down there trying to figure out, why is this debris still here? I looked over it and there's this pool of water that had been stranded by the outgoing tide. And I just expected to see trash. But instead, when I looked inside of it, I saw a shrimp that was working with its claws in the sediment. I saw this bright green anemone that was pulsing its arms out that basically had grown on the side of this concrete. Mm-hmm. But then after a few months, I saw my very favorite sea creature of all time. I love nudibranchs. And oh, yeah. We've got a photo of a nudibranch in the book, but here was this brilliant pearly white nudibranch that cruised out from underneath some algae. And I realized, so here was the stunning creature. It turns out it's actually quite the predator, but it was hanging out in debris along a fairly impacted waterfront in sight of two Superfund sites. And yet it was inspiring. Right. And just a reminder, life persists. It just needs a chance.
Yeah. As you were telling that story, I was thinking when I first came to the Pacific Northwest, I grew up in Ohio, flat. And I would pretend in the evenings that the clouds that would come in from the west were actually mountains. But I wanted there to be an ocean so badly. I mean, I hadn't really been to oceans, didn't know oceans. So when I finally was able to find my way out here, this is a wonderful place to be. And I was just overwhelmed and awed by the amazing creatures. If you look long enough and if you get out so you can look, I remember the first net pole I was ever around on a research boat. It was better than Christmas. It's just like, look at all this wonderful life. And that leads me to reflect that in many of us, there's a part of our psyche that allows us or causes us or makes us whatever see. Puget Sound is a really magical and pristine and unspoiled place. And yet, like you were talking, we know that's not really true. We know it's spoiled in any number of ways. And I'm wondering if you've had any thoughts about, you know, why we think it's so unspoiled and yet we know it's not. I mean, we kind of hold those two opposing views somewhere in our minds. Do you have any thoughts about why? Why do we do that?
Well, I imagine probably some of the same experience that I had. It looks so lovely on the surface, and we don't always get to see the damage below mm-hmm. the surface. And that's why in the book, we've got scuba divers who bring us the pictures that all is not well, but most pollution mm-hmm. is actually invisible. You can't always mm-hmm. see it.
Right.
And some of the damage has just happened over decades. And it's hard to keep the baseline from mm-hmm. what it had been and notice those kind of slow, mm-hmm. but persistent changes over time.
Because you have to be kind of in a place and watch it over time too.
Agreed. Yes.
Yeah. To really see it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was one silver lining of the pandemic is I do feel like more people connected with their home waters, their home shores, their home parks a little bit more, and mm-hmm. probably started visiting the same places over and over. And now they've got their baseline. So in a few years, they'll be able to look at, well, what's changing around them as well. So I think people are paying more attention to places like the shoreline that just drew people like mm-hmm. I did for relaxation, for just needing mm-hmm. a little bit of a break from the craziness of the pandemic.
You know, I know in your impressive list of partners and co-authors and collaborators, you had a nice representation from some of the Native peoples. And I'm wondering, do you have insight into how they saw and now see the area?
Great, great question. And I would say saw and also still see. They're such a vital part of Puget Sound recovery today. And to pull the book together, I really had the privilege to work on the chapter on the future of the Salish Sea with Suquamish Chair, Tribal Chair Leonard Forsman. And we engaged with Native people throughout the development of the book and on ongoing webinars as well. And I guess overall, I'm just really struck by their deep connections with place. So when mm-hmm. they look at a place, it's not just what is there today, but what do they see in the future? What has been there in the past? And I recall Chairman Forsman telling me a story behind a specific set of boulders along the Kitsap shoreline and how they represent animals that had turned to stone in one of the stories within their tribe. We also had a webinar with Skokomish tribe leader Joseph Pavel, who talked about how important shellfish are to them today and how much that's been a resource for millennia as context for why they work so hard today restoring mm-hmm. shellfish in that area, not just for their own people, but really for everyone. So I realize when they look at a shoreline, they're just seeing much more than my mm-hmm. eyes are seeing. And they're seeing it from the context of stories that go back generations.
Well, with that awareness, have you noticed changes in your own threads of connection to the natural world as a result of those experiences?
I think it's made me appreciate more how important it is to understand different people's perspectives on places. I've also been able to engage with multiple communities who enjoy walking along the shoreline at Saltwater State Park and seeing mm-hmm. the commonalities. What are they enjoying there? Mm-hmm. I had a really great opportunity, a workshop with Arabic-speaking communities from with another partner organization called Mother Africa. And as we were speaking through a translator about what do people value in the places around them, I just realized mm-hmm. how much in common we have, even though we're speaking different languages.
Really? And very different cultural backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think being able to find those commonalities, I mean, not only makes us feel more connected to other humans, but it's got to make us feel more connected to the world around us.
Absolutely.
That's lovely. Lovely. Mindy, this has been fascinating. And I'm so glad that you've agreed to continue talking with us, but just not on this program because we have almost run out of time. So I do want to share again some more details. Mindy is speaking Sunday, January 23rd, 3 p.m. via Zoom, of course, in the Future of the Oceans lecture series that's sponsored by the Port Townsend Marine Science Center. In that Zoom partners beautifully with the traveling photo exhibit that, as I mentioned earlier, is downtown in flagship stores, right on Water Street. And you can actually get up close and personal to the photographs there. I hope you're interested and I hope you're really keen to tune in to the Zoom. And you'll find much more information about that easily if you just go to the Port Townsend Marine Science Center website. And I also want to mention that joining Mindy on Sunday are going to be, I think, at least two really fascinating people. One is Joe Gatos, who we've had on Nature Now, and it's been several years. He's the science director at the Sea Dog Society, which is housed up on Orcas Island. And we had him on when the book that he published on the Salish Sea came out that shares the concept of amazing photography with the We Are Puget Sound site. It doesn't share, I think, any of the pictures, but the concept of using amazing photography. And then he came out with a second book not long after that, that I think was called Exploring the Salish Sea, which was targeted to a much younger reading audience. So he'll be interesting to listen to. And then is it Brian Futen? And I don't know much about him. Tell me a bit.
We're excited to get to know Brian. We were inspired. He's been by kayak doing photography along the shoreline of Puget Sound and then compiling that to share out with people. And just Ooh. In doing so, he's got all sorts of stories. So we're pretty excited to hear from him as well and what inspired him to do that.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Well, I'll be signing up. I think maybe I already have. So thank you so much for this conversation today. Now, in our sort of usual manner, we want to listen to the mystery sound and to let listeners know that there'll be a part two of this conversation with Mindy, probably within the next couple of weeks. And thanks so much, Mindy, for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Those were the very cheerful calls of bush tits. Bush tits are fluffy little sort of grayish brownish birds. They have long tails and short bills. And what makes them such fun to watch is that they go about the world in flocks and they dart through the vegetation, sometimes landing on bird feeders as a flock for a quick feed. And they make those twittering calls. They don't really have anything like a song, just those wispy, chirpy contact calls to connect with other members of their flock. Well, that's it for Nature Now for this week. We hope you've enjoyed our program, and we try to bring you authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where we live. Today's sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. Nature Now airs here on KPTZ Wednesdays at 12:30, Thursday afternoons at 5:30, and Saturdays at 12:30. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website. Our closing music today is People Power by Billy Paul from his 1975 album, When Love Is New.
I'm trying to get all of you people to believe all the things all of us could achieve.
Dungeness River Nature Center is pleased to support KPTZ programming like Nature Now. In memory of Dee and Beverly Swearingen, who taught their children and grandchildren the love and stewardship of nature, Dungeness River Nature Center, teaching generations about nature on the Olympic Peninsula at Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. More at DungenessRiverCenter.org.